You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Mayor Blocker. Mayor, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Mayor, let's talk about what you're working on now. Can you tell me what's happening in the studio or maybe give us some background on the studio?
I am a book artist and a letterpress printer, and I just celebrated my 40th anniversary of making books. And I asked a bunch of printer friends in person and via email, and also I put a call out on social media to have people carve a linoleum block for me. And then I'm making a community dictionary from all those carved linoleum blocks. And I passed out, I think, 200 linoleum blocks. I've gotten 107 back. And I'm in the process of printing them as a limited edition book. Each artist, and there were a few poets too, each artist will get a copy of the book pages. I'll sell a few of them to pay for the edition. And mostly it's just like a community project thanking everybody for their support over the last 40 years.
I love that. So let's talk a little bit more about that book. This is an alphabet book. So when you send out pieces of linoleum, the artists are cutting those linoleum, and each artist is assigned a letter in the book or no?
No. George Bataille had this dictionary at the turn of the last century with some of his philosophy buddies, and they just did kind of a formless dictionary where all the words in the dictionary, they weren't in alphabetical order, but they were in order of the pages that needed to be next to each other. And so I thought of this as kind of a kickoff on that and a potluck dictionary where I would accept any word that the person thought was important to them or important to the world right now as a word that had significant meaning. And so I felt like if I ended up with six blocks that said love on them, then we need a lot more love. And if I ended up with no blocks that said love, then okay, people are interested in other things. And it's been really interesting to see what words came up. I didn't assign people a letter and nothing. It was totally random. And there's only been three words that have been repeated. Two of them were words that two different artists sent me two blocks of the same word, and they couldn't decide which block worked better. And so I used them both because I decided I didn't want to be that judge either. And then the other word was kofefe, and and that got two different artists. And we started this in 2016. But it's been really interesting to see. I started passing out the blocks in August 2016, and I got some back right away. And then you can see as the political climate and mood changed, the shift in the words that I started getting.
And that's interesting because it is a bit of a cultural barometer, this kind of a book, right? It's
yeah.
It has to know a little bit about what's happening in the world right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it will date itself because of that, too.
Well, which is interesting. I mean, all these interviews that I'm doing will date themselves because of that. You know, we're kind of, I mean, I think artists, you know, books, cultural phenomena are all kind of dated, right? I mean, in most cases,
mm-hmm.
reflect the times that we're in. So,
yeah.
So this book will be produced, and can you tell me a little bit about your press, how it'll be produced, and what you've been doing for the last, 40 years? You're using a letterpress, you have a number of presses. Is that your own kind of atelier where you have all these presses? I know that's a lot of weight, so if you could just tell me a little bit about how you, I guess, set up this shop and what kind of equipment you have in there, how you got involved in all of this.
Okay. Let's see. I started in the 70s, and I was interested in my first degrees in ceramic sculpture. And part of the degree at the University of Washington was I was interested in creative writing and textiles, too. And to get a degree in textiles, you had to take a craft class, which was bookbinding. That led me to the special collections at the University of Washington. And I went there and saw some of their artist books there, and it was sort of like an epiphanal moment where the light went on and I realized I could put all my interest in sculpture and creative writing and textiles and materials into one form. And so I've been making books. I had made a few books before that, but I've been making books pretty much full-time since then. I've published, I think, 60 titles in that time. In the early 80s, I bought my first printing press. It was a 800-pound Vandercook 219. Since then, I think I have four more printing presses. My husband and I have a house in Idaho, which has the property has been in his family for, I think, about 128 years now. And then my father died in 2014, and we moved in with my mom so she could stay in her house. And I was lucky enough to find a power press here in the Seattle area that hadn't been used for a number of years, so I got a really good deal on it. We fixed it up. It works. And
what is it? Let me just ask you, what is a power press exactly?
It's a Vandercook press that you don't have to hand crank the handle, and you can push a button and the cylinder goes down and back the length of the press. And I forget when, I think 2007, I had a spinal cord injury, so I have a plate in my neck, and I lost the use of my left arm for a little while. I got that back. But I've had to curtail the amount of printing I could do because of my neck. And the power press has enabled me to go back to work in a significant way and has been, I can print big editions again now. So this edition is 200. And each, like I said, each of the artists will get their own book. And then, and they're going to get flat pages. And then I am teaching community classes on how to bind them in a linked blanket stitch binding, which I've redeveloped. No one ever invents any kind of book binding anymore, but I've brought it back. And it's like a non-adhesive spine. The books are very, very flexible. They have kind of a sutured look to the pages, which I kind of like that whole community random suture put together feeling of them. And that's my process. This new big Vandercook proof press has allowed me to do this big edition again, so that I'm super happy about that.
That's very exciting. And these are, I mean, I know I talked about the weight of it, and it's because I did own a Vandercook proof press at one point, a hand-cranked one. And I remember it took like four guys a whole day to move into my studio, and they were kind of furious about it. I mean, your press must weigh, literally a ton, I would imagine, right?
My 219 weighs, the 219 weighs 1,350 pounds. The CMP weighs 800 pounds. I have a couple of small hand ones that I can move myself, so those are less than 100 pounds. And this new power press is 3,000 pounds.
Wow.
So, yes, yeah. In both studios that I have, because I still have stuff in Idaho and I have stuff in Seattle, both studios have concrete floors. I'm on the main floor of our house/studio in Idaho. And in the 80s, I used to live next door to my parents, and my dad and I built a garage studio for me in the backyard, and it's it's their rental house next to my parents, and I manage the rental house. So when we had a shift in tenants, I took the garage out of the rental house equation and got my original, you know, 20-year-old whatever. I got my studio back, and it has my handprint in the concrete, and my dad and I signed the concrete. So it's it's a cute, you know, that's like my sentimental story, but I feel like, you know, I feel like my dad's still with me because of that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And so, I mean, speaking of that and the setup of everything, how is all this funded? You know, it's a medium that's, it's rarefied, right? These are all limited editions. These are all, you're not using offset at all. You're using linoleum cuts and handset type, I imagine. And all this is quite expensive. And I would imagine that even the cost of the books themselves don't cover the production.
That's probably true. I have a product line. Well, first of all, I also teach full time. And although there have been numbers of years where I just taught workshops and part time, but right now I'm teaching full time. So honestly, the reason I can do this, like giveaway to other artists' book, is because of my teaching job. I just am, you know, I self-funded that. But I have been super lucky and pretty successful with selling my books. And so I usually take the, for a number of years, my books and my artist products have supported me. And I have been able to reinvest in my own company and sell stuff on a regular basis.
Well, that's very exciting. So let's talk a little bit about that, because that's an unusual position, and that's what I thought was happening, but I wasn't sure. So how do those sell? Because you're selling them all yourself. You're doing your own marketing and everything. Is that correct?
No, I have a few booksellers that represent me, so Vamp and Tramp, booksellers in, I think they're in Birmingham, Alabama. Yeah, I know they are. They're in Alabama. They represent me, and they sell work for me. And Charles Selyazicki, booksellers in Portland, Oregon, sells work for me. My Seattle booksellers, you know, these are all people that specialize in artist books. My Seattle booksellers recently went out of business, and so that's put a little crimp in my style. The economy in 2006 kind of, you know, that made things challenging too. If people can't pay for their mortgage, they can't pay for artist books. But then you start making editions that are less expensive, but there's more copies, or you start doing little zines or, you know, print broadsides instead of a limited edition books. And so I really utilize the democracy of the press and think about if I can afford this, other people can afford it.
That's so exciting to hear. And so you're continuing to teach, and it's nice to hear that the book form and these booksellers, I imagine, are also booksellers that are kind of sympathetic to fine press books and very small editions, right?
Oh yeah, yes, definitely. They all of those people are very, very supportive of book arts and book artists, and Laura Russell in Portland was one of my dealers too. She recently closed as well, but they all have, they're sympathetic. Some of them have been practitioners. Laura Russell is a practitioner too. And so they do research, and they know what they're, you know, they know how things are made, and they appreciate that. And I think that we're all really dedicated to keeping the craft of the book alive. And so, yeah, that's part of it.
That's exciting. So there's also a community that's involved in all this, a whole bookmaking community. When you're saying, you know, we're talking about keeping the craft alive, these are the bookstores, but also I would imagine a whole community of printers across the country and I would imagine the world.
Yeah, there is. There's three groups that I'm really actively involved with. One is the Book Arts Guild here in Seattle, and I'm one of the founding members. It was founded in 79. I was only 20 then, so I wasn't super active, but I did join right away. And I just stepped down as the president of that organization. I have been really involved with the College Book Arts Association, and CBAA is mostly college educators in the book arts programs, book arts and printmaking. And then there's also a South Sound, since I teach in Tacoma at Pacific Lutheran, there is I'm active in the Tacoma community as well as the Seattle community, and the Puget Sound Book Arts is based out of UPS, basically, and that's a pretty active group, too.
And why do you think it is coming back? I mean, I love books, and I love talking to you about this, but, you know, that's nice to hear that, you know, that's active and people are buying them, and we're in this sort of hyper-digital age with apps for everything. It seems so anachronistic and surprising and wonderful that people are buying these books. How do you account for that in this culture, in this day and age? Because it's not just people who are old enough to have enjoyed books 30 years ago or something. It sounds like there's a market out there for all kinds of people.
Yeah, I think in some ways people are calling it a letterpress renaissance. And for those of us that have been practitioners a long time, it's like, oh, okay, I'll take the renaissance.
That's a good question. So is it or no, or that's just how it's perceived by some people?
I think there's been a lot of us, like, plugging away. And, yes, there is a resurgence, and maybe, and I would say all of our book arts classes, book arts and printmaking classes here at PLU are jam-packed. And I think it's a little bit of a backlash against the digital media that I think people now are wanting to get their hands dirty. I think people are wanting to make something tangible, and that's super heartening for me. And I got into making books because in the 70s in Seattle, everyone was like, oh, Microsoft, or, you know, late 70s, early 80s, oh, Microsoft computers. I don't even know if Microsoft was around then, but you get what I mean. It's like that time era. People were saying, we're not going to have books anymore. We won't need them. And I was like, we're having books over for the rest of my lifetime, even if it's just me. And and I think, you know, there's a lot of people with that same attitude. They love the nature of the book and you know, summer reading, especially now the weather's turned nice. People like to sit in the hammock or out on the beach or in the bathtub. And not that my artist books are, that's where they're looking at them, but I could make books like that.
That's fascinating that you say the classes that you have are packed, that the classes that are taught in this are packed. I mean, that really is the telling sign, isn't it? That as you're saying or theorizing, that people kind of want to get their hands dirty. It's a little bit of a backlash.
Yeah, they are full. We have waiting lists. The whole time I've been here at PLU, it's been 4 years now, there's been waiting lists for those classes. So And I feel like that's a super good sign. We just got, PLU just got about, it seems like yesterday, but it's been about a year and a half now, we got a big donation of a type museum of rare antique type. And it came here to PLU from West Coast Paper from a collector that He was like a hobby printer in Seattle in the 70s, and it's kind of funny that it ended up coming here because my Girl Scout troop went to his basement to see his printing press when I was in high school. And so it's kind of fun to have that little connection with, now I have Bill Thornley's collection right outside my office. So that's kind of fun.
That is fun. Wow. Yeah, that's so fascinating. So this, I mean, just to talk a little bit about that before we go, that collection of type that's coming, this is what, wooden type and handset type that the students are then going to get to use on their own books and jobs?
Yeah, actually it's here already, and we've started, the students have been using it, and some community members have been using it. Jessica Spring and I have a little thing that we call Letterpress Lunch, and we have the third Wednesday of the month during the school year, we have like a little open house and we have little presses, and we got a hand press in this donation. So I refurbished it and got it in working order. And we have had people like print with the hand press and then turn them into Halloween masks, or, you know, we have people print with the little presses and make little fold up sort of like zines or something. We've printed all kinds of weird little ephemera things that are just really fun, but it raises awareness of letterpress printing and book arts, and we get a lot of graphic designers and community people coming in, and a lot of graphic designers now are looking back at the historic typefaces and trying to, I think everybody's sick of the standard faces, so that
the typographers are looking back, and designers and understanding,
yeah,
a little,
yeah,
bit about
really
the elegance of what was,
yeah,
happening then, because it's kind of gone, I suppose, when laying out even posters now.
Yeah. And so we've had our students, mostly they're Jessica students now because I am teaching in foundations now, but Jessica's and JP Avila's students are printing type specimen sheets, and then they're scanning those, digitizing the type, and we're going to try and make that available to graphic designers to use.
Very
so
exciting.
We got
very
lead
exciting.
Type, wood type, all kinds of different. There's even a Bakelite type in the collection.
Bakelite type. That's
I know.
That's early,
it's
early
crazy.
Plastic, right?
Yeah,
wow.
It's super crazy. I love it. It's not. It's, you know, it was an experiment, and there's only one case of it, but. Because I think the experiment wasn't super successful, and we're not proofing it. It's like one of those novelty things to look at, but I think it's super fragile and it wouldn't withstand ink and pressure. So.
Right. Well, that's so exciting. And so let me just ask you this, there's your school, there'll be links to a lot of this in here and in the interview and in your books and art objects. And in terms of your school, is there very few places, if people want to become involved in letterpress and are excited by this conversation and wish they could find a way to do it, is there many schools that are doing this besides yours? How does someone, a novice, get involved in letterpress printing if they're hearing this?
There are a lot of regional book art centers that offer letterpress classes. There's the Center for Book Arts in New York. There's San Francisco Center for Book, I think is what they call that. There's a program in Alabama. There's a program in Iowa City. There's a program in Portland, Oregon. So there, and we have so many institutions that with programs in the membership of College Book Arts Association. I mean, they're all spread out all over the United States, Minneapolis, Philadelphia, kind of equally blanketed out. Like in January, we're going to Tucson for our annual meeting conference, and they have a little program down there too. So a lot of institutions, when these presses went defunct, when offset came into power, You know, people were selling their Vandercooks and other presses for scrap metal, basically. And so a lot of artists and institutions bought them. And now that we're in this quote unquote Renaissance phase, they're still looking for the presses and they're, you know, they're trying to score those. And so, so I think, in the institutions and the artists that have them, have become kind of stewards of these presses.
That's fantastic. So wonderful to talk to you and hear about all this. The last question I want to ask is what you're reading at the moment or listening to, because I know you listen to Audible books, correct?
I do listen to Audible books. I have a long commute each day, and a friend turn me on to Audible books. Right now, I'm engrossed in the Joe Nesbo Harry Hole series. So I think I am on book 9 right now of those, and I've been listening to them, you know, constantly for about a month. I also listen every time when I can't figure out what I'm going to listen to, I listen to American Gods. And so I think I've listened to that 6 times this school year.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your work and the time you took to talk with me today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.